This is Cade Massey, practice professor at the Wharton School, on this week's Wharton Moneyball Highlight Show. We talked to Bill Connolly, longtime football analyst, currently with ESPN, friend of the show. We're talking NFL draft from a college football fan and writer and analyst's perspective. 30 minutes. We're always happy to get 30 minutes with Bill Connolly.
From the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, this is Wharton Moneyball on Business Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to Wharton Moneyball here on Business Radio at SiriusXM. This is Cade Massey hosting this week with my longtime Wharton Moneyball collaborator, Eric Bradlow, professor of marketing and statistics here at Wharton. Our collaborators, Audie Weiner and Shane Jensen, are out and about doing Audie and Shane things. They'll be back. But we have wonderfully, delightfully, Bill Connolly to join us. Bill is one, he might be like Steve, we've probably done this routine before. Steve Martin's the all-time host leader on Saturday Night Live. Bill Connolly might be pushing all-time guest leader for Wharton Moneyball. It's partly because he's a great guest. It's partly because he's a college football guy and we're partial. It's not because he has a book that says the Sooners over his right shoulder. That's not the reason.
It was balanced. I made sure if I was going to put an OU one there, I had a Texas one. I have an Ole Miss and a Mississippi State one over there too. It's a little SEC heavy now that I look at it. I need to balance that out a little bit.
Well, you got Nittany Lions. I know your boy Frank's going to be happy that you got Penn State represented. That's good. Bill is a staff writer at ESPN. He before that was with SB Nation. He is off of the Aaron Schatz writer tree, which is quite the tree. And Bill has been at the forefront of college football analytics for years now, and has quite the platform at ESPN, advancing the conversation, making everybody smarter. We love having Bill on the show. You can see him at ESPN underscore Bill C, at ESPN underscore Bill C. He also gets his article splashed on the front page of ESPN frequently. So this is a time of year where, oddly, he spends a lot of time tweeting about European soccer. He's like, this is how he refreshes his college brain, I think. Bill, how are you doing? How is April going for you? What are you thinking about right now?
Yeah, I'm good. And it is funny, my Twitter follower account, like once the college football season ends, I think a bunch of people just give up on me and try to refollow in August because they know, especially since my previous series isn't even started till May now, like there's no reason to follow this guy until at least May. So
Bundesliga, baby, all about the Bundesliga. If that's not the way you roll.
It was a very me set of stories a few weeks ago. I had like two on location or, from interviews from a couple months ago, but still sort of on location Bundesliga pieces right next to a draft piece and college football coaches who will define the next decade piece and all this stuff. So it was, I like going in different directions.
Well, we grabbed you because it's an excuse to talk about college football, this being NFL draft week, and you had a piece a few weeks ago, April 1, I believe, and it was a serious piece despite being April 1, on statistical comparisons for some of the top guys, especially quarterbacks. But before we drop into that and specific guys, how do you think about it as a longtime college football observer? How do you think about the NFL draft? And of course, the QB question is a good way to make it concrete and sharp. And it's always interesting the difference between guys that excel at the college level and then do or do not excel at the pro level. It makes the challenge of picking these guys so high. What have you learned? What do you think you know? What do you think you know, Bill, about how to project a college quarterback into the NFL game?
It does feel like over the last 5 or 10 years, it has just been this kind of this slowly coming to grips with the fact that we're never going to be good at this, like particularly good at projecting guys or whatever. Like it's always gonna, especially quarterback, it's gonna matter as much or more who he lands with, what offensive coordinator he lands with, the organization he lands with, how much patience they're gonna have, all these things. And I think, maybe some people have written papers in the past about nobody being better than anybody else at drafting guys, but no, it really becomes like, I have my own opinions, but for the most part, it really does feel like, these are guys we've talked about for 2 or 3 or 4 years or whatever. And it just becomes like, we're sending them away and I'm hoping they do well. Pretty much everybody in the draft, I hope they do well. I'd like to see them continue to, I like to be able to, 3 years and then I'll pop up and, oh yeah, that running back from Iowa State. Awesome. That's so cool that he's, and so that's how I tend to look at all of this. I do think that, as far as quarterbacks go, though, this year in particular.
Hold on, Bill. Let me stop you for a sec because yeah. I just want to jump on the one thing you started with, which it struck me as just irrefutable and obvious if you step back far enough, and that is, how much do you think the individual, Eric, this is aimed at you. How much do you think the individual quarterback's qualities matter to his success in the NFL versus all the other qualities in the building and on the field that vary by team? I mean, just consider, we're talking about differences between Caleb Williams and Drake May versus the differences between 32 organizations or whatever, six that are in the battle for him. And you named a couple, but let's just name them. The 10 other guys he's on the field with at any given moment, the guys behind them that come in, the guy who's calling the plays, the coach who keeps all 53 guys active on a roster together at any given moment, the training facilities, the defense, the culture of the place, the city's media, all of these factors, they go on. And we think, and we just neglect it all. I mean, we tend to just go, it's a guy and he's going to succeed or not. And if we step back and think about it from that distance and say all of these other factors versus the difference in players, I mean, it's probably less than half.
I'd love to think that it's at least half, but I can't prove it. And you're right, including the media and everything too. But no, I mean, I started to realize, especially after that 2018 draft, like we argued about that class more than like any
Remind us who was in that class.
So that was Baker, that was Darnold, that was Josh Allen, that was Lamar Jackson, Josh Rosen. It was a bunch of guys who were completely different from one another. First of all, that was really interesting. And that's something that is very much the case in this year's class too. But then also who we thought would be the best, who we didn't, you know, it's, these
okay, past so five what or did, six. What did you learn from 18? What do you take away 5 years, 6 years later now?
Starting with that. And I think since then, you really do start to notice like, well, if the Jets are picking you, you're probably not going to work out. You know, if Washington this year, we heard about Washington having some weird personnel thing where they bring in like all the quarterbacks at the same time and all these things. That sounds terrible. And it's probably why Washington's in the top five and has had one winning record in the last however many years. So, yeah, you just start to realize that the organization really does, like, especially if we're talking about specifically the top guys, like obviously a guy who's projected in the first round probably has more of a chance to succeed than a guy projected in the sixth.
Yeah.
But especially if we're talking about the top guys, it's what are you going to do with them that matters the absolute most. Josh Allen was as bad as I expected him to be for two full years. Mm-hmm. And the Bills just kept putting good pieces around him and trying to find the right offensive coordinator or offensive system for him and all these things. And they gave him enough time and he grew enough late that it clicked. And so, yeah, I mean, it really does. You're drafting this guy, but it's up to you to a large degree whether he succeeds or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bill, two-part question. One is, I just saw a statistic the other day since Zach Wilson, I think, was traded. I think he was supposedly traded on Monday. I haven't seen the details of the trade. Maybe for a sixth rounder or something like that, which is impressive. If we look at the 2021 draft and the first-round quarterbacks, there were five. Only one of them is still with their team. That's 3 years later. Trevor Lawrence at number one. Then Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones are all gone from their original team. So maybe to build on Cade's question, do you think there's just kind of, I'll call it irreducible error, that no matter what statistical methods we use, no matter what data we collect at the combine or from college, no matter what pre-NFL data we have, there's just going to be such large error variance? And maybe that 20%, let's call it success rate, like they actually live their first contract out.
Right.
Maybe that's all we're going to get.
Yeah. That class in particular was interesting because of the COVID year and everything. So there is that. But, and you know, if the New England Patriots had continued to function as the New England Patriots and Mac Jones had better pieces around him and a better play caller and blah, 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 he started off pretty well. And so he had a pretty high floor and it just never got better. But yeah, I mean, that's an organizational effect to whatever degree.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, Zach, like I said, you know, Zach Wilson is the second top five, top two or whatever quarterback that the Jets had in a very short amount of space. There's probably a reason for that. And so, Yeah, I mean, you can Justin Fields was always going to be an interesting test case. Zach Wilson coming off of such an easy schedule and making his stock rise as fast, that was always going to be interesting. Trey Lance playing one game as a sophomore and then going into the NFL draft, that was not optimal. So there are a lot of weird cases going on that year. But yeah, I do think to whatever degree, there are going to be absolute standouts, just physically, mentally, guys who have three more steps to take in their growth that you don't even know about. Maybe those guys are just more likely to succeed. But you're always, I mean, not everybody thought that about Patrick Mahomes, that he was one of those guys before he became one of those guys. So
let me just follow up with a question. I'm going to give you one of two sets of quarterbacks, and I just want to know which one you'd take. Let's assume they're the same cost for the moment. So you either get Caleb Williams or whoever you're
Eric, let me hold on for one second. Before we go into specific players, I just want to say about this 18-21 comparison we just made. Mm-hmm. Eric's saying the 21 class is like really kind of washing out, especially Zach Wilson just traded for a sixth rounder or whatever. You named this 2018 class, which was such a rich quarterback discussion and so much debate in the 3 months going into that. And we thought that was a great quarterback class. And it has not proven to be a great quarterback class. And moreover, the top quarterback so far was the last one taken in the first round.
Yeah.
So it's just again and again, we learn this lesson. We don't learn the lesson that we have such a hard time predicting the order of these guys. What I'm saying is we even have a little bit of difficulty saying whether it's a strong class or not, because 18 was a rich, supposedly strong class and has not borne out that way in any form or fashion. The best guy being the last guy taken in the first round. Okay, Eric, I just want to say that before we jump into this year's class. So Eric's going to take us into this year's class.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say you can have either Caleb Williams or pick your favorite of the top three, but let's just say Caleb Williams for a second, or I'll let you draw from the maximum of the distribution of J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix Jr., and Bo Nix. So you can have those three or that one. Which one are you taking?
So he took out the numbers two and three, right?
Yeah, if I said you could have Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and J.J. McCarthy, I'm assuming you take those three for sure. But I'm intentionally going to the fourth, fifth, and sixth ranks quarterbacks. Right. And you can have those three or number one.
I'm just trying to picture a team that actually drafted three quarterbacks in the first round. That would be spectacular.
I've been saying this on the show for a while. Why not? But let's pretend. Well, I just meant you're 3 years later. Which one is going to have a higher ceiling, do you think? Caleb Williams, or you get the maximum of those other three?
I think recent history tells us to go with the quantity. I personally think that of those, Caleb probably has the best chance. But if you're giving me three versus one,
that's what I'm asking you. I'm asking you to make the trade-off of what your prediction of the effect size is versus the maximum of three is going to be pretty good. And
yeah, it's like a women's tennis slam right now. Swiatek's the best player, but if you're gonna give me her or like 7, 8, 9, and 10 in the of the top 10, probably
you'll take
7, 8, 9, and 10. Yeah,
well, we play this game in various tournaments, like how many do you need off the top to be different between them and the field. A couple things on this. We speculated on this show a month or two ago. What's the probability that the best quarterback, the first quarterback in the draft, is the long-term best quarterback in the NFL in that draft?
Yeah.
And we were ballparking 25-30% kind of chance. David Leonard of the New York Times, he hasn't published this, and I'm not sure if he's going to publish this, but he did his own crunching the numbers and dug through some things. He rated them in a reasonable way using Pro Football. No, it wasn't PFF. He used some objective stat, MAV plus, I think, WAV plus, WAV. And at any rate, his conclusion was that the first quarterback taken since 2000, I think, in the 2000 to 2021 or so drafts, was the best about 40% of the time.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a little bit higher than I would have thought. And Eric, it suggests that it's unlikely historically if the one versus numbers four, five, and six are going to add up. The taking two and three out of there was the diabolical move you made that might have actually kept the scale in favor of the number one. But, you know, and I was thinking about this for the first time a minute ago. Eric, you know, we've had that conversation about various sports for years. I've never thought about it in terms of the draft. Imagine, guys, because people don't understand how much of a trade-off there is. They say, look, the odds of getting a star quarterback drop off as you move off the top of the draft. They do. they drop off. And so people say, if you want a star quarterback, you really need to be at the top of the draft. But they're not making an apples to apples comparison, because they're not comparing, they're comparing one pick to a lower pick as opposed to one pick to three lower picks, whatever the draft chart equivalent is. And so, yeah, the chance of getting a star quarterback drops off, but it's one versus three chances. And maybe you don't draft all in 1 year, like Bill just said, but you could, at least in theory, take the third quarterback 3 years in a row, or this year's top quarterback. That's like the more realistic, if you're kind of, and this is something teams do. They're in the market for their franchise quarterback for years. Yeah. Some teams we know have been in the market for franchise. How long has the Chicago Bears been in the franchise? Since Jim McMahon, since 1985? It's possible that's how long they've been looking for their franchise quarterback. And so don't tell me this isn't what happens. You can trade, you can take the first pick in the draft, the first quarterback in the draft, or let's just say the third quarterback for multiple years in a row, 3, 4, 5 years. That's the comparison. Which would you rather get? Which is going to be more likely to give you the franchise quarterback? And the fundamental mistake people are making is they're not thinking bundles. They're thinking pick for pick, and that's not the right comparison. It's bundle of picks versus bundle of picks. It also leads me to think about, people don't understand how steep that drop-off is. Here's a question for y'all. How many picks down off the top, using some standard chart, draft pick trade chart, do you need to go to have equivalent draft capital, the first X number of picks, or every pick after the first X? For equivalent draft capital, you're just going to divide the whole draft into two, where the draft capital is equal from the trade chart's perspective. The very steep Jimmy Johnson-esque trade chart. How far do you have to go down to make equivalent bundles? Just to give you a sense of how steep this thing is. Using all 250 picks. Do you understand the question?
I do. I understand it. You're saying, let's say I said the number five. You get the first five, I get the other 245, and I claim that they're equivalent or not, if that's my number.
This is, I'm just saying in the official charts, and like the market.
I'm going to say what's the market number? Five.
What's the market say?
Five.
Oh my God. That's really steep, Eric. It's not quite that steep.
All right. Six. Okay.
Now I'll jump in now that you've said that, and I'll say like 11.
It's like 19. Okay. So it's the first top, the top 19 or so are equivalent in draft pick capital to the subsequent 231. Now you might say, that's, you know, I'm not interested in the very, very, very late rounds. Just consider the first two rounds. I think this is kind of sharper. First two rounds, you're looking for a superstar. You're going to consider those first two rounds. How far down the first round do you need to go in order to build two bundles? One at the top of the first, that's draft capital equivalent to the rest of the first and all of the second.
Some number lower than 19.
That's right. That's right.
See, I got that right. Right, Bill? You got to give me credit for that.
That's all right. This is turning into price. Like,
no,
reverse,
it's higher
price
than that, because
right,
rounds three through whatever are worth almost nothing. Yeah. So I'm going to say, you just said 19, 14.
11. Mm-hmm. $1.
It's right around 16. So it's the first half of the first round versus the second half of the first round and all of the second round.
But that's a great statistic, because it basically says that rounds three through whatever aren't worth that much. I mean, it changes
in draft capital.
Enter by
that's
three
right.
slots in draft yeah. capital.
But I'm trying to build the intuition for, if you want to find those stars, yes, they're more likely at the top, but you get more chances down below. So do you want the top half of the first round or the second half of the first round and the entire second round? Which of those two do you want to find your superstars? And I'm hoping you're building, look, odds are against this thing. There's an irreducible uncertainty, as Eric says. When there's irreducible uncertainty, what the key to it is more chances, more lottery tickets, more darts.
By the way, you were talking about the taking the top one now, or the third quarterback for the however many years moving forward. I just went back and looked. The last five third quarterbacks drafted were Dwayne Haskins, Justin Herbert, Trey Lance, Malik Willis, and Anthony Richardson. So one success, Richardson maybe.
Herbert.
That's not a great batting average right there.
Yeah. No, but hold on. You said Justin Herbert, no?
Yeah.
That was the one success.
Yeah.
So we don't know about Anthony Richardson yet.
Right. So we'll say 1.2 right now. He did look better than I thought he did for a very, very tiny sample. And
okay,
we'll
give us all the ones.
So the ones, now I have to flip back to Wikipedia here. So 2019, the first one was Kyler Murray. 2020, the first one was Joe Burrow. Sorry. 21 was Trevor Lawrence. 22 was, oh, that was the weird draft where there weren't any quarterbacks and it was Kenny Pickett. And then last year was Bryce Young. So better, but
yeah, better,
not necessarily dramatically better.
Well, yeah, Joe Burrow was obviously exceptional, and Trevor Lawrence is more than serviceable. I mean, he's good. I had to live through the penalty since I'm a Buccaneers fan of, you know, the Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota year. And so, and of course, now we're living through the Baker Mayfield. Those are two number ones right there. And I don't know, that's not so great.
Yeah. And by the way, 2018 ended up actually, if you think about it, being a pretty solid set of quarterbacks simply because a lot of them are still in the league
Except for Josh Rosen, who was there for shockingly 15 minutes. Unbelievable. But let's bring it back to the trade-offs that we're talking about. So you might like Caleb Williams. You seem like you liked him in your April 1 article.
Yeah.
But how do you like him versus Drake May and the bundle of other resources you could get if the Bears traded down and let someone else take Caleb? Or how do you like Caleb versus Daniels Drake May versus Daniels if the Commanders could trade down and take that kind of thing? So how much more do you like them versus the price they have to pay, the opportunity cost they bear by taking them?
Yeah, I mean, I do think I trust Caleb more than anybody else, but I think the drop off after Caleb to me is pretty significant. So this year I might say Caleb. Most years I would say the second or third. And I should say with Jaden Daniels, he might be unbelievable. I have absolutely no idea. Because, I mean, he was, you know, I watched him, you know, Missouri only lost two games last year. One was to Georgia and one was to Jaden Daniels. If anybody worse than Jaden Daniels is playing quarterback for LSU, Missouri wins that game. He was the way everything came together for him in his fifth year of college football was one of the most interesting things I've ever seen. And I have no idea, like the whole point of that April 1 piece was like, what kind of comps can you make in terms of like a guy's most unique traits, you know, how have those traits done when it comes to previous prospects? Justin Fields is the only thing close to Jaden Daniels. Daniels is faster than Fields. He scrambles even more than Fields. He probably takes more sacks than Fields, and he makes more good plays than Fields. And I don't understand how that would possibly translate in the NFL. It could nothing's going to surprise me about his forthcoming career.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That what you named as Caleb Williams's most distinct trait was his ability. These are my words now, to extend plays, extend even the pocket.
Yeah.
Of course he can rush, but he buys time. And of course you can't say that in these days without thinking about Mahomes. And he avoids sacks, but also he just keeps the play alive and then gets it out at the last second. So how much are we jumping too much to conclusions? How much is Mahomes just so salient that now anything in that neighborhood gets pulled into Mahomes land? How much overreaction is that to what we've seen from Caleb Williams?
No, I mean, if you look at guys who combined just taking forever to throw the ball, doing whatever it takes to extend the play, and then just extreme efficiency, not even necessarily tons of big plays, because obviously Mahomes is resume, his explosiveness and efficiency has just gone, like every year I guess he's efficient, but the explosiveness keeps going down. He keeps having to check down because of the defenses, but he still just he buys time and then makes a smart play over and over and over again, and that's what if Caleb Williams pulls off that routine, he immediately gets it's Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, guys like that. It's very hard to do that in the pros. And if you do it, you're going to probably be really good. You're probably going to be Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes. Now, I think, you know, what was fun about the comps thing is there's always for every single one of these guys on this list, there was a reason to slam on the brakes as well. And guys who took a lot of time in the college ranks to throw the ball, like this tells you that doesn't always translate, because the two guys who with the best statistical, just the most statistical similarities with Caleb Williams across the board were Zach Wilson and Sam Ellinger, who haven't translated that to the pros even slightly. And Wilson was, of course, looking overwhelmed from the very start. I personally think Williams is more of, you know, the Wilson Mahomes than the Wilson Ellinger. But that tells you right there, it's not a guarantee that his whole, I'm just going to drift out of the pocket and whatever isn't going to get him hit forever and constantly.
Man, I've just developed such an instinct to short stories whenever people make it feel so inevitable. That I mean, I saw. I mean, look, as a Longhorn, we knocked Rattler out of two Red River shootouts in a row, and Williams came in and won two in a row. And it's just, I'm glad to see the guy move along, but I'm just, you've got this is a draft where you've got a bunch of guys at the top close together, and yet the price for them is steep between them. I hear you on tier. That's the argument that he's a different tier, and you might not trade across tiers. But I'm just a little skeptical. Nothing against Williams, just kind of instinctively skeptical. Bill, while we got you on the way out here, give us a little something on the 2024 football season. I mean, all the changes are now upon us, right? This is the new era, both in terms of realignment and in the playoff, obviously. We're also seeing some of the fruits of NIL. Eric was talking about before the thing started, before the show started, that this is a draft where we have kind of returned to pre-NIL levels of underclassmen coming out. So like less than half as many underclassmen declared for this draft, which we believe is a product of NIL. So this is, that means, we got more talent still around the college football landscape. What are you thinking going in? What have you got your eye on? What are you most excited about? How are you gearing up for this world we're about to walk into?
Well, I do think to keep it tied to college football and the draft for a second, I have started to realize over these last few weeks, like, wow, people are talking about all these quarterbacks and then a record number of potentially awesome receivers and a record number of potentially awesome offensive tackles or offensive linemen. I'm starting to think, wait, so college football is losing a record amount of offensive line talent, a record amount of receiver talent, and a record amount of quarterback talent. That sounds like a pretty dire year if you like points at the college level. I'm curious what that means, because you do look at I'm just looking at my SP Plus list. Georgia returns their starting quarterback, but Ohio State changed theirs. Oregon lost theirs. Texas, I mean, might be changing theirs now.
Oh, come on, come
no,
on.
I go out of my way not to take a single thing from spring games ever, so I'm going to assume it's yours still. But Alabama lost theirs. Michigan lost theirs. LSU lost theirs. Notre Dame, like, there are a lot of quarterback changes at the top. And a whole lot of like good pass rushers and stuff coming back too. And maybe that means good defense is going to be the story of this coming season. Well, I don't
It
know.
just means buy ewers for Heisman, I think. I think you need to buy some
That's right.
ewers futures
I
for that.
should have looked and said, did his odds go down after Arch Manning went, 50 for
Oh,
50 for
that's not
5,000
happening.
yards
Come on.
or whatever he did in
Come
the spring game there?
on.
Or maybe
Well,
that should be, I should be short in Texas defense. Maybe that's how that
that's
works.
entirely possible. Yes, that is entirely possible. Well, it's going to be fun to read you as we roll into that. I know you're about to start your previews. It's just a whole new landscape, fascinating new landscape. I know there's some bittersweetness to it. We're not necessarily looking for California teams to be playing in the Big Ten, but we've got it. It's here. And the playoff will certainly be fun to get into. Bill, as always, thanks for making time for us. Keep up the great work, even the Bundesliga work. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely.
That's been Bill Connolly at ESPN underscore Bill C, longtime friend of the show, great football analyst and writer. This has been Cade Massey and Eric Bradlow for Maddie Datz, the boss man, for Dion Simpkins, the associate boss man, for Kelly, the intern. Thank you guys for listening. Many thanks for that. Come back and join us next time. Between now and then, enjoy your sports.